A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 83. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of The Last Train, also known as Cruel Earth. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yep, The Last Train, a post-apocalyptic TV show about the survivors of a disaster who have apparently slept through the early years of some form of global disaster, and they awaken into a new world to find themselves possibly the only ones in it. And this was a show from the ITV channel, and it was broadcast in 1999 in 6 50-minute episodes, so a sort of mini-series approach.
So we talked quite a bit about the setup and the characters last time, but we didn't talk that much about the disaster itself and the sort of preparations and responses to the disaster. So what we learn fairly early on is that parts of the scientific community were aware that an asteroid was on a collision course for Earth, and they had decided to keep it secret from the public. It was kept as a classified thing, but it was something that only sort of the major governments were able to track, but all of them were tracking it. And they were aware that this would happen. This asteroid was going to hit Africa, I believe Zambia. And the impact, when it finally did hit, threw tons of soil up into the atmosphere and altered the Earth's climate. And we were not entirely sure what all of the impacts would be to the climate and other aspects of the Earth.
But it must have been a huge event, and it's mentioned by the scientists in the show as an extinction-level event. And in fact, they also go on to comment that, rather unusually, they make the comment that the dinosaurs got 150 million years before they were wiped out by an asteroid, whereas humanity only gets 2 million years before the asteroid impact that sets up this show. Apart from our survivors, of course, who have slept through the whole thing because they were in some form of cryogenic sleep on this train that had crashed in a tunnel at the start of the first episode. And so somehow they have been suspended and kept alive and awakened sometime after this disaster, although how long after is not immediately clear, is it, Brian?
Yes, that's right. There are questions right from the beginning about, well, how long has it been since this asteroid strike? And that question keeps coming up, and the characters keep getting hints and keep thinking, well, maybe it was a little longer than they had thought. Well, maybe it was a little longer than that. It's quite a while before they actually find out how long they were in suspended animation. And of course, the reason they were in suspended animation was because Harriet, who was a Ministry of Defense employee, was trying to get to a bunker in Sheffield where people were going to hide out, and there was going to be a sort of mass suspended animation to wait out the worst of the problems in order to come up and sort of rebuild society and repopulate the Earth. She was trying to get there, but she had one canister of the chemical that would induce the cryogenic suspension. She was carrying a canister of that with her just in case she didn't make it. And this is, of course, what happened, that they did a little mini cryogenic experiment of their own accidentally on this train car, and that's how they got there, while the more organized group in Sheffield and perhaps in other places had this elaborate system where lots of people would go into a cryogenic sleep, and they had lots of provisions for setting things up in the aftermath. But exactly what happened to them and if that was successful or how things worked with that is really unclear to us at the beginning.
Yeah, that's right. And as you said, we've got this character of Harriet, who is a scientist working for the Ministry of Defense, and she is in the know about what's going on, but rather sort of like, as you say, she's not a terribly likable character, and she's rather reluctant to give up information to the rest of the group of survivors. But she does lead them into Sheffield because she wants to get to the bunker that she had originally been intending to get to before the disaster. So she leads the group to this mysterious bunker, hoping to find, in particular, one particular sort of survivor, her boyfriend. But what they find there, Brian, unfortunately, is that everybody at the bunker appears to be dead as well. And that's when they start to get this inkling that they've been frozen in time for a lot longer than they perhaps originally thought.
Yes, there's some interesting things there. And it's not, there are many things that are left quite unclear for most of the story, which was kind of interesting. Harriet was sort of very acerbic and kind of difficult to deal with for the rest of the group, but she was also the one who gave them this guidance and this hope of finding Ark and getting there. That was kind of interesting. That worked fairly well. And of course, along the way, they have to deal with looking for clean water and food and just surviving to in the short term to get there, and dealing with, in some cases, running into other survivors that aren't that friendly, and also packs of feral dogs that have become predatory and things like that. So there are some pretty intense things in this environment that was created.
And the environment has changed quite a bit, because not just not just in ruins, there's also changes to the environment that they notice. And Harriet comments that the plant life in England appears to have changed, and that was a result of all the seeds being thrown up into the atmosphere along with all the tons of soil. And so they encounter plants that you wouldn't normally find in England, which puzzle them. And they also have to deal with things like acidic rain, which is quite unpleasant and causes some nasty sequences in this program.
Yes, for sure.
And you've mentioned the mysterious Ark, because once they've found the abandoned bunker, the next goal that Harriet is going to lead them towards is the mysterious Ark, which is certainly for the UK is humanity's last hope. And that, we're told, is somewhere in Scotland, and the group must travel there to try and find what's happened to the rest of humanity.
That's right. There was the bunker where everyone had died out that we find quite early, and then there was looking for this Ark, which is supposed to be quite large and sophisticated, and this is sort of the goal for much of the series.
And as you say, as they head north, they've got various encounters along the way, various adventures and difficulties to overcome.
Absolutely.
A body of rock broke away from the asteroid belt. I'll be on the orbit of Mars.
Please, this isn't helping.
Shut up.
Everyone was tracking the asteroid. They tagged it SD426.
Everyone, this rock hit Zambia and half of Sheffield falls over.
An asteroid the size of a football could hit your house and make a crater that'll swallow your whole street, plus a few adjacent ones. SD426 is about the size of Birmingham.
This is ridiculous. There's nothing on the news about an asteroid.
There'd have been a programme about it on the telly, surely. Like that one on the other night about the earthquakes.
Well, this information was classified. I mean, nobody even believed it was going to happen. Jonathan's was a lone voice.
Oi!
Well, you know all about it.
Take it easy.
Hey!
And you know what happened to us on that train.
What's this? Okay.
Harriet Ambrose. What's Ark?
Now, we should talk about the good and the bad, our own little review and comments of how we felt about this show. So, Eamon, what did you think were some of the good points about The Last Train?
Well, we should talk about the look of the show, because that works particularly well. The CGI, which we mentioned in the last episode, to show British cities lying in ruins, in particular Sheffield, which gets destroyed yet again. That's all very well done. And then they chose their locations to perfection and then dressed them absolutely to the nines with rubble and litter. Goodness knows where they found it all and what they had to do with it afterwards. But, you know, the look of this show is really quite well done, Brian, isn't it?
Yes, I basically have no complaints about the look of it. It looked very convincing and, you know, very sharp and really worked very well. I enjoyed the story and the character journeys on this quite a bit. I had the sense in this show that it was not a predictable story in any way. I wasn't sure where it was going to go, and it didn't feel like any of the characters were safe. Certainly for most of the story, it felt like just about any character could die at any time. And some of the major characters and sort of pivotal characters do die sort of not at the end, but sort of in the middle of the show. And that made things quite interesting, that you had this sort of dark, gritty show where the characters were not guaranteed to survive to any particular point. So that was something that I thought worked particularly well.
Yeah, they never seem safe, do they? I mean, they never achieve a degree of safety in the show for these sort of main characters we've been talking about. And as you said, Brian, some of the characters that were introduced fairly early on get killed off fairly early on as well. And as you say, you get that feeling that anybody could die at any time, really.
Yes, there was a sequence in the first episode with a character being attacked by dogs and dying that was quite... You didn't see that much detail, but it was a pretty brutal type of thing. And at that point, you realized that they would go fairly far in this show and that other characters could die at any time. They were vulnerable.
And as you said, the characters all go on their own individual little journeys or character developments or arcs, I suppose, not to use the word wrongly, but there's a lot of character development in this show.
Yes, there were a number of relationships between characters that were developed in different ways, both romantic relationships and other types of relationships. And some characters, were sort of helped by other characters and grew because of that. And some grew and changed because of the situation. But these were not sort of static characters who started in one place and just sort of sat there. There were journeys for all of them, and that was something that I thought was quite good.
The actors themselves, I mean, it's a good bunch of actors, familiar faces from British TV, quite interesting. I did feel that sometimes they were perhaps let down by the script in some of the things they were required to say, which sounded a bit odd and random. But the actual performances themselves, Brian, I don't think there was any particular problems with any of the performances.
Yeah, I thought the performances were pretty good. The casting was quite nice. So all in all, I thought there were a lot of pretty strong elements fitting together in this. So what were you a little more disappointed with, Eamon?
Well, we've mentioned the problem of the scientist who knows what is going on, but is very reticent to actually tell anybody. Now, obviously, that's a plot device because the writer and director don't want to give too much away too early on. But it does become a bit irritating. And as you say, helps to make the character of Harriet rather unlikable when she clearly has some information, but is very slow to give it up to the group.
Yes, that's right. It added to the tension in certain ways, but yeah, maybe they should have come out with that a little bit sooner. But it was a bit of a different way of doing things there.
Of course, she's the one who actually gets the group frozen in the first place. And as you say, the sort of suspended animation, the cryogenic sleep that they're in is very important to this show. And I don't think we're giving too much away when we say that the amount of time they've been asleep is quite significant as the plot develops.
Yes, there are definitely key points related to that. There was quite a strong sense of tension in this, which I rather enjoyed. As you mentioned, Damon, the dialogue at points was a little bit strange. I think they were trying to go for a sort of dark and gritty and realistic kind of feel and went a little bit far in that in some ways and sort of carried a bit too much strangeness into the dialogue and maybe should have brought it to something a little bit more conventional.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, there are problems I found with the dialogue in places, certainly in the earlier episodes, when they just seem to be spouting random lines at each other and not actually reacting to what each other says. And then, of course, as you say, it is quite a dark and gritty and gloomy show. Life after the apocalypse is not very nice. It's very unpleasant. But that probably fits in with the sort of gloomy post-apocalyptic science fiction stuff we've talked about on other examples of British TV, like Day of the Triffids and so on.
Yes, and it fits with the style of things that were being done at the time as well.
And it also, you know, it's quite similar in tone to Threads, which we've mentioned several times about Sheffield being destroyed by a nuclear attack.
Yes, although Threads was much more focused on the idea of the nuclear attack and what the outcome from that was. What was interesting and unusual in this particular take on things was that this was not a bunch of people dealing with the apocalypse, whatever it was, immediately afterwards, it's a bunch of people who are new to the situation, but the situation itself is not new. So they're not able to, you know, scavenge things sort of freshly when there are still stocks of food around and things like that. They're having to deal with a situation that is new to them, but society as we know it has been gone for years.
Were there any other elements that you found didn't work quite so well, Brian?
I didn't think there were too many problems with this. The dialogue did have problems at points, for sure. It was as if they were trying to make everyone seem really shocked about the situation, so be a little less coherent, I guess, but it made it less coherent. So there were sort of some dialogue problems there. The characters I thought were good, although some of them it would have been nice for them to be a little more likable at times. There weren't enough likable characters at certain points in the show. At some points there were, but at certain points there was a bit of a problem with sort of everyone being, you know, not quite likable enough. But all in all, I felt it was pretty good.
Okay. I mean, there is the other problem I noticed, which is that their journey north could be a little bit dull if it's just a journey. So obviously the writer, Matthew Graham, has to come up with some incidents along the way. And as you say, we've had the attacks by packs of dogs. There's an incident with a mysterious giant wild cat of some variety. There's the hunt for a wild pig for food, which seems to go wrong. So they have to have, you know, they have to invent some sort of adventures for the group to have on their journey to north to learn more of the mystery of the Ark.
Right. So did you think some of those were a little bit awkward in their presence?
I just thought that, yeah, some of those were just, contrived in order to give the character something to do while they're on this long journey, which otherwise would become rather dull. So, yes, a little bit contrived in places.
Okay, that's a point. I can see that there is a little bit of that in there. So we should talk about availability here.
We should, because it's not straightforward, is it, Brian?
Well, that's right, because The Last Train has not been released on VHS or DVD. This is one of the few shows that we've done where that's the case, but we thought this was an interesting enough show that we should cover it in any case.
So never available on VHS or DVD. It does crop up from time to time on YouTube, with the episodes usually split up into multiple parts. But as with any sort of commercial show, it does get taken down fairly quickly. So it depends when you look as to whether the first episode may be up there on YouTube.
Yes, it's also been available for download on some peer-to-peer sites. We used a site called uknova.com, which specializes in British television that has not been released on DVD or VHS. So as we certainly avoid getting these sort of pirate downloads whenever we can, but in this situation we did turn to this site that deals with unreleased programming. And hopefully it will be released, and I would certainly be interested in buying a set of DVDs for this if it comes out.
It's strange it's not been released by ITV, particularly with Matthew Graham going on to have success with Life and Mars and the sequel Ashes to Ashes. But perhaps that was because that was when he was working for the BBC and ITV, for some reason, not releasing as much of their back catalogue of programmes as the BBC do.
Yeah, you would think this would be a pretty good one to release, because I think it does hold up pretty well when compared to things that are being done now.
Yes, it would be a very straightforward release. And, of course, lots of the people involved would be available to produce DVD extras as well, I'd have thought. Strange it hasn't been.
Yes.
However, if you are interested in getting hold of a copy, you might perhaps just Google The Last Train on DVD. You might find some interesting results, and I perhaps shouldn't say any more than that at the moment.
That's fair enough. It has been broadcast recently enough that you can find it online if you're looking for it.
Yeah.
So I think that brings us to our recommendations.
So, Brian, what would you have to say about The Last Train? Are you going to recommend it to our listeners?
I will recommend it. I quite like The Last Train. It does have a few problems in some of the dialogue and some things being a little contrived in places, both in the events and maybe how some of the other groups of survivors are acting and things like that. But I like the character journeys on it. I like the look of it. I think the story and where they go with this is an interesting one and does lots of unexpected things along the way. It's not much like a lot of the earlier British sci-fi shows that we spend a lot of time talking about, but it is an interesting one, and I quite like it. If they come out with a DVD release, I will certainly be buying it. And I would say, yeah, if you're interested in something like this, a 6-episode post-apocalyptic sort of dark, interesting kind of show, check it out. It's worth finding a copy and watching.
Okay. I would agree it's an interesting show with a very distinctive look. I would have to say it's a rather gloomy and downbeat show, that life after the apocalypse is not very nice. Whether I would recommend it, I think, depends partly on the availability. If it was readily available, I think I would advise people to check this one out. But because it's somewhat difficult to get hold of, I think I'm going to be more cautious in my recommendation, Brian, and suggest that you might want to look elsewhere for your post-apocalyptic British science fiction thrills before you go to The Last Train. And I would perhaps point you back to Day of the Triffids, which we've already covered, from the 1980s, or maybe to Survivors, which we hope to cover in the future, either the 1970s show or, for a quicker hit, the more recent remake.
Yes, I think those are good recommendations for the classics of British post-apocalyptic sci-fi on TV. The 1970s Survivors and Day of the Triffids are definitely the ones to check out. My other recommendation would be ITV. Please release The Last Train on DVD.
Yes, tell us why not, if not.
Indeed.
So it's a recommendation from you, and it's a cautious recommendation from me. And as always, if you've seen The Last Train yourself, or if you can remember it from when it was broadcast in 1999, then please let us know what you thought.
Oh yes, please do. So, in summary, The Last Train was a 1999 post-apocalyptic serial that dealt with a group of people who were traveling in a train car and were put into suspended animation by the use of a device that one passenger was carrying. And they wake up sleeping through the asteroid impact event that destroyed civilization as we know it, and wake up many years later to discover England in ruins and look for the few remaining isolated pockets of civilization that they think may still be there, and go on a journey through England and through the ruins and hazards of what is left of England, and have some very interesting surprises along the way.
Okay, an interesting show. If you've seen it, please chip in on the Facebook group and let us know. So next time, we jump back to the 1980s to cover The Tripods, a BBC series based on a popular series of children's books. Quite an interesting show with quite a cult following, and we'll talk about the two series of The Tripods next time.
Yes, that will be one that I'll look forward to, because it's quite a neat show. You can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us. Please come back next time for The Tripods. Until then, this is Eamon from England saying goodbye.